Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
I just wish I would have found these things earlier. I wasted a lot of time mulling through things, covering things up with alcohol. If I would have had these skill sets, maybe I could have started this path earlier. But again, I try not to be like obsessing on the past, coulda, woulda, shoulda. It made me who I am today. I can show up for veterans going through it now and try to help guide them through it. We got a lot of stuff going on here for veterans. So now I can talk to them like I've been here. I've been in that dark patch of suicidal mm-hmm. with a plan and dealing with mental health stuff. And that's what got me to where I am today. So feel me when I bring it, sing it loud.
I'm from the loop and I'm proud. Run a mile for the cause. I'm right. Hi, guys. It's your girl, Nechama, your favorite Jew from the Lou. Welcome back to my podcast. And as you know, I like to travel with my podcast. And if I can go to the place of a local business owner and show their space, that's always my favorite thing to do. So today we're here with Josh Hildebrand. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're here at his sauna right here at Breath and Exposure. And it's not as hot as it typically normally gets, but just for the experience, it's going to be so cool to do it here. Yeah. So thanks for hosting.
It's going to start to warm up. You're welcome.
Yeah. Okay. So just to get started, I want to know your whole background and how you got into firefighting, but then what led you into Breath and Exposure in terms of like starting this whole business. So let's just go from the beginning.
Okay. So I did two tours in Iraq. I was a Marine.
Mm-hmm. I was kind of thinking about you this morning when I put on my shirt. I was like, represent.
Yeah. Did two tours in Iraq with the Marines, 2000, 2004. Came back, and then I was a St. Louis City fireman. Mm-hmm. Did 7 years there. And in that end, I realized through things happening that my mental health was not the greatest. Mm. And so it kind of started to self-sabotage, not being the healthiest, always like just inflamed, you know, not sleeping unless I was drinking, very rigid, very black and white thinking. And that was just a survival mechanism from seeing and doing all the things that I had done.
Right. Were you that way beforehand? Like, was your personality, would you say, very like black and white?
No, I mean, I was a kid, so no.
Okay.
No, but when you see certain things, unless you have the skill set, which we can talk about, that I developed this, that's what happens. You just get very jaded, very closed-minded, very, the world is this way. And then there's a big ego attachment to it. Like, I've seen things that you haven't seen. You don't know my pain.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, trauma, all trauma is trauma, whatever that looks like. Childhood, combat. So in 2017.
Well, I mean, you can't really compare the two.
Well, with how it translates in the body.
Okay, yeah.
So not like textbook, right?
Yeah.
But how it's going to show up in the body, how you respond, how it creates disease, all the mental health aspects of it.
Right. What I mean. I guess a good analogy for that would be like a little kid who's crying over the fact that they didn't get the color lollipop that they wanted. And as an adult, you're like, it's okay. There's more important things. But for them, with what they're compared to, like that is the biggest thing in the whole world to.
Right. One thing I love to say is like the hardest thing you've ever been through is the hardest thing you've ever been through.
Oh, I love that.
And it's not fair to compare that or those things because it all translates to the same, you know, once you don't manage those things.
Right.
So in 2017, I was kind of going through it. I was in 2 years of sobriety and I found cold exposure in Austin, Texas. So I tried it at a climbing gym in Austin, Texas, and then just did a deep dive. Nice. Got every certification that was out, started doing just the ice baths at my CrossFit gym, CrossFit 26. And then it just started growing.
So going back, because I love to talk about people's first experiences whenever they're doing something totally different. Mm-hmm. And I think a cold plunge, it's pretty viral right now, if you will, which mm-hmm. I know is kind of like a word that not people are so thrilled with hearing when it's like you understand the depth behind why it is. Mm-hmm. It's more than just a trend. It can really help you in your everyday life. But back in the day, I feel like it was something that really, it seemed like only athletes would experience. So for you, what was that first experience like when you went into that ice plunge? Like, do you remember?
Well, so my first experience was a cryotherapy. So okay. They had a setup like mine, but it was a cryo chamber trailer.
Okay.
So that was my first experience.
Those are the taller ones, right? That you go into and they close
like
the door.
A phone booth and your head sticking out.
I've seen those.
So that was my first experience.
Yeah.
I had never seen it before. I tried it and then that's what made me do the deep dive. And then I realized the cryo was good. It gave me that like, okay, I'm awake feeling, but it didn't have the same mental health aspects as the actual cold plunge.
Okay. So when you went through the cold plunge though, what was that like? Because to go from experiencing it to wanting to bring it to others and make it a part of who you are.
Yeah.
That's a huge jump.
Yeah. So the biggest thing for me when I got in was, you know, like, oh, this is horrible. I want to get out.
Yep.
And then developing the skill set to know that I can breathe through this.
Yeah.
If I can breathe through this, I can breathe through anything.
Yeah.
That past trauma comes up, that future thing. It's like, oh, so it made me understand and develop that I'm my own alchemist.
Yeah.
I can use my breath to control my inner state, which then translates, I call the ripple in the pond. Once you can show up in that way because you have a skill set, things just resonate instead of the opposite, which we all know what that looks like when you don't have that regulation.
Yeah. I mean, I'm probably going to butcher all the science behind it, but I did just see a post about this yesterday, actually talking about how when you do hard things, like I think it's your frontal lobe actually like gets stronger and expands, and then doing hard things becomes easier mm-hmm. in terms of not that it gets any easier the first time you do something hard, but your ability to get through it because you have that previous reference of I did something hard plus the tools like breathing.
Right.
To be able to get through it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's an oversimplification to say, but it's true. So anxiety is an obsession of the future and depression is an obsession of the past. So it's up here and we're ruminating. Again, that's an oversimplification, but that was a way that I could be like, okay. So the ice then made me like get in my body, focus on my breath. I mean, you just did it. There is no future. There is no past tense. You're just there trying to get that breath in that survival mode. And then once you get through it, that's when you get that dopamine, that norepinephrine, all those healthy chemicals once you downregulate.
Yeah.
So to segue back to what you said about the sports, those are the people that have the hardest time that come through. Like I did this in football. We did this all the time, but most of them are getting like waist deep, maybe chest deep, and they're just getting that muscle relief. So they're getting in, they're white knuckling it. I call it broing out. And they're just like getting through whatever the minutes were.
Yeah.
When you come through us and when you do it for a down regulation mental health practice, you're getting into here, the chin, where that vagus nerve innervates into the skull.
Mm-hmm.
You have to find that breath. It's a whole different experience than just getting it for muscle soreness and muscle relief.
Yeah.
When you get to there, then you're getting both. You're getting the muscle relief. You're getting the down regulation. If you have a good coach that allows you to, you know, coaches you to down regulate. And then you release and relax into it instead of this, like just controlling it. And so there's a big difference. And that's why coaching is a huge thing, just like fitness. Like if you get in and just do that, you're not getting nearly the benefits as if you're actually down regulating and dialing into it.
I think that's where the breath work comes in as well.
Right.
Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
doing the 15 to 20 minutes beforehand makes such a big difference.
Right. And that's how I tailored my program. The first 10 events I did for free, almost nobody got through 3 minutes. So I designed my program based on setting people up for success. Once I implemented what we do now, everybody gets through 3 minutes.
Yeah.
It was like an instant metric. I was like, oh, okay, this has to be part of it. There's a lot of businesses popping up now. I call it the tanning bed model, where it's just you pay for the thing and there's no coaching. And it's like the breath is the anchor of our program. It's the anchor of what we do. It's 25,000 times a day. It's what we do. So it's always going to be part of what we do. It just sets people up for success and then gives them tools when they leave us.
Well, I love it because it's just the whole experience, you know, because from start to finish, it's almost like a 3 hour experience if you're coming to one of the classes.
Yeah.
And I loved how you were also like, I reached out to you because I was like, oh, he'd be a great guest. And you're like, yes, but you need to come experience it first.
Right.
So
thank you for doing that.
Yeah. No, I think it's so smart, honestly, because how can I talk on it?
Right. I've done other podcasts where people hadn't done it, and then we're talking about what they could or would feel. And so that didn't feel very compelling. So thank you for.
Right. Yeah. No, what's funny is I had done one right beforehand, and it was really cool to be able to compare and contrast the experiences. I'm really glad that I had that first experience because then I came in more intentional, knowing what I wanted to get out of it, which was really cool. Because I think sometimes with these kind of experiences, people have the mentality of, oh, I'll try anything once, especially if everyone's doing it. It's something fun and different than just like going out to drinks with your friends. So like, why not do something cool?
Right.
I'm a big experience girl. I had a whole event with you, with just like friends that I invited, which was awesome. But I think it was just such an incredible experience because when you're sitting there doing the breath work first, it's giving you a chance to like let go of everything going on in your life, all your stresses, all your daily thoughts.
Right.
And then you feel kind of trippy afterwards. Mm-hmm. You're like super relaxed. And then I guess you're not as freaked out about going into the ice plunge. Even if you are a little nervous, you already have that breath work that you can tap into. Mm-hmm. And then you feel that trust with the instructor because they guided you through. So you're like already that trust is built. And then sitting down in that ice plunge, it never gets easier. That first initial like shock, but like even just small subtle things. Like Cody was the one who led the one that I did. And he even just like helped with like putting my hands up in almost like a yoga pose where it's just like the release. And then he's like, is there a world where maybe you can relax your face? I was like, I can. Yes, I can. And then just all those things together, it really, really helped.
Yeah. He's a great coach.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. Can we? Yeah, please.
So you said it never gets easier.
Yeah.
And much like going on a hard run. You're right. It never does. You get more fit. You get more adaptable. But I always tell people I'm a fireman. So most people have the same schedules throughout the day. I don't. So 2 days a month, I go to a firehouse. If I come off the firehouse after having a high acuity call, I'm up all night seeing things that most people don't see. I do an ice bath. It feels like I'm new.
Mm.
So I'm in that fight or flight state. I'm more up here.
Yeah.
I'm going to be more rigid in the body and the mind. And it takes me sometimes 30, 45 seconds to find my breath. And that's just because of what I've experienced, right? I don't have control over that. But what I do have control over is having those practices. I'm on my four day now. I get 4 days off at a time. By day two, I get in, I can start with an underwater breath hold. I pop up when people see me that are here for their first time. They're like, oh my God. But that's because I'm regulated. I didn't just come out of a stressful stimulus for 48 hours.
Right.
So every time you come to the ice bath for ladies' menstrual cycles, had a fight with the spouse, stressful stuff in business, maybe you watch the news too much. Every time you come to this practice, it's going to show you what's going on in your central nervous system and your body.
Yeah.
So like you said, doing it once is cool, but having it as a practice is going to have you show up better because you're going to be like, oh, why is this hard today? This, and this happened. Okay, can I reverse engineer that?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe not work as long last night or maybe sleep more or maybe not have that extra drink. So it's a great way to like be in charge of your system. And like I said, be a ripple in the pond and show up a little bit better by just making those choices based on how you felt when you got in that stressful stimulus of the ice.
Yeah. And also the body keeps the score.
Right.
And I don't know about anyone else, but for me personally, I don't breathe very well when I'm stressed.
Right.
I tend to hold my breath. Even let's say if I'm working out, if I'm like doing an extra hard weight where it's like I've gone up a level, I'm holding my breath instead of breathing through it, which ends up making it harder for me.
Right.
I'm aware of it. I'm working through it. But like what I loved about the ice plunge experience was that when you're in that ice bath, you can't fake it. You can't fake that your body's okay. You can't. And like for me, sometimes I don't even realize how much tension I'm holding on. But with the ice bath, if you don't relax and you don't regulate your system and get into your breathing and just like figure out where in your body, like you said, you're holding on to something and how do I reverse engineer it so I can be better in the future? It's really such a great communication for you to be able to like just be better and be at home in your own body, which is so great, and release anything. Because I think there's been that big movement of like therapy. So we've learned emotionally maybe to release things, but sometimes we haven't released it as much as we think if your body's still holding on to it.
Right.
So I think it's just a great mirror.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is why when people come through, sometimes people have emotional experiences because they're holding on. And when they start the breath, that hyperventilation breath can bring things up.
Mm-hmm.
If you've had a panic attack or anxiety attack, it can mimic those sensations, but then it's giving it less power because you're putting yourself in that state. So the next time it comes, or when you get in the ice bath and you're doing that hyperventilation, you're like, oh, I was just here. I can do this. I can control my breath. I can be my own alchemist.
Yeah. A phrase that I like to repeat to myself a lot is like, I can do hard things.
Mm-hmm.
What's nice is it's that frame of reference too, right? Because if you think about it, in the grand scheme of things, an ice bath, not that hard.
Yeah.
But your mind feels like it's the worst thing ever. Because you first get in, you're like, I did the thing. But then when you realize you have to be there for another 3 minutes, that's when the panic happens for me at least.
Yeah.
So learning to like not just do something that's hard, but last.
Yeah.
That was a really cool skill that I didn't have before.
Yeah. So I was doing this before it was on social media and everywhere. And when I first started the events, the number one thing then and now, but I don't like the cold, Josh. And my response is nobody likes the cold.
Right.
I do it because I know that instant feeling once I downregulate. I know because I know what I feel like afterwards for 5 to 6 days. So I just override that sensation. Most of the time I do it, I'm by myself. I don't have a coach. I'm coaching myself. So I do it for that afterwards, you know, much like when you're developing a fitness routine. People that work out, once they do it for so long, they're doing it because it helps them show up better.
Right. That's something people don't talk about, by the way, even like within the gym, where it's like, I think people see people who are fit, or at least people who have like a regime where they're going all the time to the gym. You're like, well, you're just one of those gym people. Like that's just who you are, right? As if you didn't have to work hard to get there. But life happens. Schedules are chaotic. Plans change. It never gets easier to go to the gym, I think, personally. And it's just more about where do you define it in your life? Because if you make something a non-negotiable, it's not a matter of is it easy or not. It's just the matter of I will make time for this because future forward, you know that you're going to feel better.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And movement's medicine. That's another thing I like to say in post. I mean, movement is medicine.
Oh, yeah.
You're going through something, get outside, go for a walk. And then how do I feel after that? And so, like I said, the ice has been part of that non-negotiable for me, where it's just something I'm going to do. I know I'm better when I do it. I feel better. And then it helps because I'm not just talking about it. I'm living it. It helps kind of spread the message.
Yeah.
To say, like talking to you, like how and why I got into this. It really positively impacted my life. It's very trendy right now.
It is, yeah. But that's not a bad thing, I don't think.
I would say it's trending, but it's not trendy. Like this has been around for thousands of years.
Fair.
The West is just catching on. There are Nordic countries that have more saunas than people.
Mm-hmm.
This has always been a thing.
Yeah.
And so we just had this industrial revolution where we started working and didn't work out. And then gyms were built. And now we're kind of getting back to our roots, getting in the cold, getting in the heat to feel better. It's always been a thing. So it's funny to me to see it like catching on and people are like, oh, it's a trend. It's not, you know, get online, Google it. People have been doing this since the beginning of time.
My friend, she's going to be a guest. She's not a guest yet, but she is from Ukraine. And she thinks that these are the funniest things ever, because to her, she almost thinks like the little cold plunge bath is like a joke, because in her country, they'll like actually like do swim. Yeah, in the ice, like natural pools of water.
Right.
So she's just like, oh, that's cute. You're making your own little ice bath. That's so fun.
Yeah. I would love to have that. I mean, yeah. We've done a couple of events. Just hard to do.
Right, especially here. Seasonally, right? Because right. You can't do it when it's warmer.
Right.
Right. So my question is, I was literally just thinking about this as we were setting up before the event or the podcast started, which was, it's kind of ironic if you think about it, that like you were drawn towards being a firefighter and also, which is like a huge heat element. And now you're also incorporating like saunas into your life.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a weird random connection that my brain just like did. But did you ever like put that connection together where you're just like, do you find that maybe the saunas are easier, or was that part of your training as a firefighter to be able to handle the heat?
I never really thought about that correlation. I decided to be a fireman because I wanted to continue to be of service.
Okay.
So it just seemed like the next step from being a Marine. And then when I found how beneficial this was, that's when I started breath and exposure. So it just felt like another way that I could be of service. Like no one's doing it. No one's spreading it.
Mm-hmm.
No one's has a sauna this hot. No one is doing contrast therapy. It's just another way that I can be of service. Which again goes back to the mental health stuff. Like if I just let myself go and I don't work out, I don't move, I'm not trying to be of service, I can really self-sabotage. I cannot be the greatest person. And I know that because of what I've been through. So this is a way for me to be present, for me to show up and to be of service and help people that are going through whatever stages they're in their life that I've been through. Like I said, whether that's family trauma, whatever it looks like, the body keeps the score, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to show up the same way. Inflammation, mental health issues, you know, all the things that happen when we have some stuff that we're not able to process and we're just walking around up here, whatever that looks like.
Right.
So long answer to your question. It just, I've never put that together, but yeah, that is funny. There is a lot of like heat elements when it comes to what I've chosen to do.
So it's just another connection, right? Because there was the service element, but then there's actually the element of heat.
Yeah.
You're like, that's all part of it.
Yeah.
So I remember we were talking in our pregame about how, I mean, Marines, anyone who's been in service, firefighters, servicemen, like a lot of them, especially if they're men and they're in their masculine, they're going through a lot of trauma. They're seeing a lot of things that the average person doesn't see. And it could make you jaded, which I think is like the soft word for some of the PTSD that people can be going through when they're going through that. Mm-hmm. And so emotional regulation, breath work, woo-woo stuff is very important. Mm-hmm. And I know we had mentioned that you said you really wanted to help that community and the men there to be able to like tap into that. So what was that like in terms of bringing that element to them?
You know, I just try to be a lighthouse. It's like anything. I mean, I'm sure you have friends that you want to help them, but you can only lead a horse to water. So I just show up how I am and try to present it as this helped me in this way. And then people started to come. I offered a half dozen free for first responders. And the first 2 years that I did this, it was 99% women.
Right.
And then big podcasters started talking about it a year or two ago, and then men started to come.
Like Joe Rogan. Yeah.
The like biohacker people. Mm-hmm. But in the beginning, it was all women. So it took a while for men to start coming. And I asked my women clients, like, why do you think that is? I just looked at my metrics and it's mostly women. And my wife included, they're like, women don't care. Like men are like, how am I going to look? Am I going to get out? Am I not going to be able to do this? And women have looked at it. They know the health benefits. They're going to do it. They don't care about optics. And I found that very interesting. So then when big podcasters started talking about it almost 2.5 years in, then I started to see men coming, which has been an interesting transition because that's why I started it, to give all people, but specifically men in my position who are just holding on, you know, and just always angry and lashing out at their spouse and kids.
Yeah.
And have other tools so they're not just walking around creating cancer. I mean, that's what you're doing. When you're in that fight or flight state and here all day, I mean, we know that you're creating disease in your system.
Right. Well, I think, listen, when you go down to like the source of like femininity versus masculinity, like obviously that's evolved and changed and it's different per person and per like relationship. But I would say that masculinity has the potential to be so healthy. We need protectors, we need nurturers, but it's just a matter of finding that healthy balance where everyone's like really in their element. Because masculinity, if you're holding on to all that and you're unleashing all that negative emotions onto yourself, your body, the people around you, you're not being a healthy protector. You're not being in your best element. So it's just, I think, reframing it to right. This is just part of the masculine journey. It's not meaning that men are more woo-woo or anything like that. It's not right. A bad thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until I started this journey and started getting around people doing these things, I never saw that model.
Right.
I never saw a present, a man that had emotional intelligence in his toolbox, that carried the masculine, but was also like able to have conversations. And so once I saw a couple of examples of that, I was like, oh, that's a thing. Okay. And mm-hmm. So that's the other mission, is to like show men you can be present, you can be emotionally intelligent. It doesn't make you anything negative.
Right.
Being closed off, not talking about things, only yelling when there's conflict, not being able to negotiate or talk through things mm-hmm. is not healthy.
Right.
And so you start to figure that out when you're in a place that you have to start doing the work.
Yeah.
So that's another part of my mission, like showing men and trying to talk to men, like you have to talk through things. It doesn't make you any kind of negative connotation, you know?
Yeah.
We grew up in a different world than today. But things really haven't changed that much. When I talk to my kids, right. Like the classes and the school systems are the same. There's still this boys, you know, all the terms that came up when I was young, 45, mm-hmm. all the terms that kids called each other still exist. So just trying to be a model for my son to like, hey, that's not how we talk to our sister or to women or how we show up. And it's okay. It's okay to like go through emotions and process it. It's the human experience, and not to just bottle it in, stifle everything, and find healthy ways to process it.
Right. Well, it's hard. Like you said, if there isn't a model for it, whether it's at home or the school system or just our society at large, how are you supposed to tap into this wealth of knowledge if you don't even have access to it or a living example?
Right.
And I think men specifically also, I saw this like interesting, it was like a series of interviews with like men asking them, it's like, what do they prefer? If they prefer to be loved or respected? And they all would rather be respected than loved. And obviously in an ideal world, you have both. Mm-hmm. But I think like, a lot of times, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, because obviously I'm just speaking from like observing men, but I think that men also really care about how they're perceived by their male counterparts as well.
Right.
So even if they know something to be true, if they feel like they're going to be perceived less than or not as like an alpha man, if you will, then they may not do something that they know is beneficial to them because of that ego.
Right. Yeah. And that brings up exactly how I got here. So there are people that are just living stereotypes. Mm-hmm. And before I found all these things, I was a living stereotype. Marine veteran, combat veteran, firefighter, didn't have the models that we're talking about. And so going through this, I was like, oh, that exists. I can be this. 20 years CrossFit coach. Started getting my education into coaching. And I was like, very scarcity mindset. Like, what are my fire buddies going to say? I'm not going to be teaching breath.
Mm.
And so I had to process and get over that and realize.
An ego death.
Yeah. It's like, fuck what they think or say. Like, I'm doing this because it affected me, helped me positively.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's got to do it. And that's why I was coming back to Ripple in the Pond. And I just got over that myself. It's like, I don't care what people say or think. I'm on a mission to spread this and help down regulation, be like part of the zeitgeist, and just got over that, what other people are going to say or think about me, which goes back to your point, what men are doing, which is why men didn't come the first 2 years.
Right.
They needed somebody that was the biggest podcaster in the world to do it, to give them permission.
Right. Someone who seemed very masculine and who other men respected. So there always has to be someone who's trailblazing it, right?
Yeah.
And so then it's just a matter of, I think, internally, whether you're like a man or woman, just thinking for yourself of, yeah, I mean, even women too, though, right? Like, yes, women do that. But I'm sure you've also noticed that a lot of times women tend to come in groups. Mm-hmm. They won't come as individuals mm-hmm. more often than not to things as well. So I think that's like an interesting twist that women have, where it's like, that was something personally I had to learn to get over, where it's like, wanting to do certain things in life whether it was travel, whether it was going to experiences like the cold plunge and not feeling like I needed to like invite a group to hold my hand, you know? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's starting to change too. I mean, every event I'll have a single female or a single male just coming on their own.
Which is awesome.
Because they ask their friends and all their friends are like, absolutely not.
Right.
And they come anyway. So when I hear that, I'm like, good for you.
Yeah.
Because now when they go back, like I felt this way. I slept better. I felt more regulated. Mm-hmm. That'll then give their friends permission to possibly come try it.
100%. The
people that don't like cold. And really cool to see people step out of their friend zones and try these things so then they can bring it back.
And even if their friends like don't ever end up coming, I think it's so important to pave your own way. Because if you wait for people to come with you, you could be waiting forever. And I feel like the more that I've stepped out of my comfort zone and done things independently, especially when there's a bunch of people around me who are like, I could never, or I would never. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, so don't, but I will. And then it just makes me realize that that scarcity mindset, you start to see certain people like that bleeds into everything in their life.
Right.
So one small step of like stepping out of that and you're like, well, what else can I do?
Right.
And then you just follow your curiosity.
Right.
I saw another really interesting thing recently where it was talking about how in life, you're talking earlier about how like anxiety is when you're focused on like the future mm-hmm. and depression is when you're focused on the past. So another thing with like the future, whether we like it or not, it's something we all think about, you know, and consider because our actions today affect our future tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we feel like, well, my life looks different than others. I don't have a plan or things kind of turned out different than I thought they would. And now what's next? Mm-hmm. And that's where then anxiety comes in. But it's like, but what if when you're thinking about the future, if everything was laid out perfectly, maybe that's not your fate. Because that means you're already following someone else's path. But if you don't know what's next, that's actually really exciting because that means you're following your fate. And I think the coolest thing about like getting older is just that like you have that reference of I've lived through my worst days and things were okay or they weren't. And then somehow they became okay. And the right people, the right opportunities, they flow into your life.
Right. Yeah, things are going to happen. And again, I just want to reiterate the defining mental health, that's a very oversimplification. There are chemical things that are happening inside people. Mm-hmm. But when you simplify it by that, and then you use the breath to tap in to get present, it gives those things less power.
Right.
So I don't want to turn anybody off by saying it like that, but that helped me kind of like rewire how I was thinking about things. Instead of saying, I have PTSD, it's like, no, I've struggled with PTSD. Mm. Or instead of identifying that thing, I have depression.
Huge.
I struggle with depression. Or I'm anxious. I'm going through anxious thoughts. Mm-hmm. Instead of identifying this is who I am, it's a temporary thing that we can control and also get out of that with our breath.
Yeah. It's so interesting that you bring that up because my uncle's a psychologist. And one of my earlier episodes, I labeled it. The title of the podcast is The One Where Labeling is Disabling. So that podcast episode, I was saying how a trendy viral thing that really bothers me is how a lot of people say that I have depression or I have anxiety. And I'm like, but there has to be a clinical difference between people who really struggle with clinical diagnosed depression and anxiety versus those who experience depression and anxiety. Going back to movement as medicine, if you don't work out and move your body and even at the very least walk outside and get some sunlight for like a few weeks, you're going to feel depressed. That's right. A physiological response that doesn't mean you have depression.
Right.
You need to move your body. That's just part of your health and taking care of yourself.
Right.
So I asked my uncle, and if you want to know the answer, you should go listen to the episode. But I asked my uncle, like, what's the difference between when is someone really should seek a professional and need to be on medication versus just experiencing it? So there is a difference.
Yeah. And, you know, what found me to this is I came back, went to the VA, diagnosed me with all the things, mm-hmm. throwing meds at me. And the meds were just Band-Aids. Mm. And every outside thing that you take is going to have a negative side effect.
Totally.
And so I took everything that they were telling me to take, and none of them helped. Mm. It basically made everything gray. You know, and we're meant to have ups and downs. And
yeah.
I think that's something that we want to avoid. It's like,
it is.
The thing is coming. The pain is coming. And there's that graph, stimulus, choice, response. So it's just every time it comes up, acknowledging that we have a stimulus, whatever that is, the choice, that's where we insert things like this, the breath work, and then the response, instead of just living in it.
Like, yeah.
I know guys that stayed in where I was in and just take the medication and gain a bunch of weight and aren't moving. And the first thing I ask when people come here, like, how did you get to here when you were struggling with all these things? And I say, are you on your phone 6-8 hours a day? Mm. Most of the time, yes. Are you seeing right angles indoors 16-18 hours a day? Yes. Are you moving? Are you drinking water? Most of those things can be fixed, like you said, getting outside, mm-hmm. finding connection, something like this, or a rut club. Just getting outside, not seeing right angles and blue lights, and getting off the phone.
Yeah.
And just processing things on your own, and just knowing that those ups and downs are going to happen.
Right.
But that gray that I was living through was almost worse than dealing with the flashbacks and all those things, because I wasn't living. I was like a numbed out version of myself that I didn't like, and I just completely got off everything. So that's not to negate people that need it to get to a certain place.
Right.
But I didn't find it to be a way that I wanted to live.
Yeah.
And again, I struggle. I can go right back to not being my best self. And then I just have to get back and be mm-hmm. like, okay, not sleeping great. Starting to feel inflamed again. Oh, I haven't done the ice bath in 9 days. I haven't done breath work today. And just get back to those practices that serve me.
It's so simple. It's stupid. That's the thing. And I think, especially nowadays, with so many like viral biohacking and health things, like, okay, like for example, people are really into getting their blood work done, right? Which I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. That's important and good to do. It's always good to kind of get that feedback on where your body's at. But at the same time, both with that and the other side, which is like the medication, right? I saw this book once that really made it so simple. Eat, move, sleep. Mm-hmm. You have, before you start like freaking out that you need to be doing all these crazy things, just ask yourself, where are you at with all of those things? And including mm-hmm. in your eating, I would say with like, are you drinking enough water, right? Because that's mm-hmm. a huge part of it too. Eating, hydration, moving, and sleeping. If mm-hmm. all of those things are in a good place, you should be good if you're consistent with it. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I'm always just like, that's what you need to tap into, going down to your basics.
Yeah. I mean, if you're not doing those things, you're not giving yourself a fighting chance.
Right.
You're just not.
You see the world differently when you take care of yourself. When you're getting enough sleep, you're drinking enough water, you're moving, you're going to be in a whole better place.
Right.
But I mean, obviously, if you're going through more like PTSD and trauma, you need to deal with that too. You need like to get like the therapy and the help to work through those emotions, because mm-hmm. it's a lot.
Yeah.
So I feel like your whole journey really feels like a combination of following your own curiosity to figure out how to live your best life, but then also combining that with service. Because what I love about your journey is when you found things that worked for you, you want to share with the community.
Yeah, but I had to work through those things.
Right.
Like I said, when I found the breath, I was doing it on my own. Started just with the ice bath. And then, like I said, the ripple in the pond. When I started doing it, Luna, one of my coaches, does all our back end stuff. She mm-hmm. showed up and was like, you need an Instagram page. Mm. And then Cody came along, and like the humans just started showing up.
Oh, so they like serendipitously found you.
Yeah, because I was starting to create community. People were coming. They were feeling better. You came to the event. You can be not know a soul here. And everyone's half naked. And mm-hmm. I always say it's like a bunch of 18-year-olds on MDMA for their first time. Mm-hmm. Everybody's getting along. I've never heard politics or anything negative.
It's such a fun experience.
People are connecting.
Yeah.
All the inhibitions have dropped. And there's just, it's always good vibes.
It's so always. Great.
So there's a community aspect to it. So when I started doing that and got over myself and the judgment of others, it just started happening. And it just kind of built organically, never paid for advertising, just kept showing up, kept doing the work, and it just continued to build, which shows to me that it's needed. You know, people want community. People want to do things that are not involved going out and partying and drinking all day. And it's starting to catch on, which is cool. So we're going to start doing like Friday night pop-ups where big groups come and just hang out instead
That's
of doing
so
it
great.
Saturday day. Why not offer things where people can do it on the weekends so they can do the things that we're talking about? We know people want to do it. So we're going to start providing that space.
Yeah. So I know like you've kind of just, it's grown as you followed your curiosity. In like 10 years from now, if all goes well, like what would, like no limitations, no scarcity mindset here, what would be like the ideal of like where Breath and Exposure would be?
So my mission is just expanding and presenting it to as many people as possible. So we're getting ready to do a shipping container sauna. So having groups of 20 plus come at a time, creating a training institute where people can come and get certifications through us. But the biggest step, and me and Cody are going to work on it, there's a guy doing it now called Physiology First. It's implementing all of these school sets into the school systems. The best way to get people to not be these stereotypes as men, women, and mental health crisis is to expose them to it early. So teach them how to breathe through stressful things when they're young. Teach them the breathing gears when they're working out. Most people start running and they stop because it's hard. Teaching them how to breathe and use the gears of breathing to get through it and start it as young as possible. So getting into the elementary schools, making it a college program instead of just a certification that's sort of fringe now, like making it mainstream and being part of that push to get it into the educational system.
That's so smart. Yeah.
Which has nothing to do with monetary. None of this ever was to do with monetary gain. It was all about just spreading it. You know, it does cost money to get things going. And as I keep building, the money comes as people come. But none of this has to do with money.
Yeah.
All of this is trying to spread it, be a ripple in the pond. But the next phase is going to be starting as young as possible so that these kids have the tools.
Right.
One of my favorite stories is my son. I think it was during quarantine. So he was like 8 years old and we hit turbulence, the turbulence on the flight where like you can't get up, you know, it's really shaky. And I look over at him and he's doing box breathing on his own.
That's so cool.
Because he's grown up coming to my events. He's done the ice bath. He's done the sauna. I've walked him through and on his own, he's regulating his nervous system, which most adults today can't do on a turbulent flight. And that it makes me want to tear up just thinking about it. I mean, he has a skill set that most adults today don't have. And so that's when I was like, okay, there's got to be a way where we can keep building, get that street cred where people know us, know our brand. It's so big in the zeitgeist that people then are like, yeah, we want you to come in. There's some high-level sports teams doing it. But it's going to take some work and he's going to keep showing up and being a lighthouse. But yeah, when I saw him do that, I was like, these kids are going to change the world.
Yeah, totally. That's amazing.
I mean, that's something that I didn't learn until
we didn't have access to.
Right.
Yeah, it wasn't even a thing.
Right.
That's brilliant. Just thinking offhand, I know Will mentioned, Will's the owner of the CrossFit gym. I know, and he's going to be a guest on soon too. So he mentioned that on Saturdays, there was like the kiddie CrossFit classes. So maybe there can be some sort of tag team that you do there as well. For those kids who show up.
Yeah, to start dabbling.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because I feel like, especially the parents who already are encouraging their kids to be part of the CrossFit community, to be more like open-minded to that concept. And that could be a really cool way to already start to get like content out there where you're connecting with the community. Other parents, parents talk, you know.
Yeah.
And once the ball gets rolling, it just organically grows.
Yeah.
That could be a fun way to start.
Yeah. Yeah. Good idea.
This is where my mind goes. This is like, this is why I want to do like Cafe so badly, because like it's these kinds of conversations where I don't know what it is about my brain, but I think like when you're, I went to art school. So when you're creative, people think that that's just more of like, oh, you can draw really well, but you just see the world differently. So it could be applied to business too. And so it's like, anytime I hear someone say something about their business, my brain is always thinking of like all the different ways that they can go about it, just from different perspectives.
Yeah, I love it.
It's cool.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering too, with breath and exposure, is that ever, I know you said that you're also like a firefighter and that's really your main role right now. Mm-hmm. And then breath and exposure has been something you've been doing on the side and it's been building and growing. Is there a world where you see breath and exposure being like your main focus and you kind of leaving your firefighter days behind?
Yeah, if it grows and expands and going to the firehouse is pulling me away from the mission, then yeah, there's no timeline on it now. I'm just building and growing. So I'll have to make that decision when I get there. But the cool thing is now, like being able to do both, I have a job that I have to use breathing. Mm. So we just did a burn the other day at a burn tower. And I'm talking to these young guys about how my bottle was able to last much longer than theirs. So it's a great, I love it now because it translates. I'm using something athletically and as a first responder that I can implement and use as an example. So right now it's great. It's a lot going on. But yeah, eventually it'll be too much and then I'll have to step away and then just run this full time.
Yeah.
But there's no timeline on it right now.
Just kind of see how it goes.
Yeah.
Go with the balance.
Yeah.
So on that note of being a firefighter, I actually like want to ask some questions about that because I'm so curious. And you're the first firefighter I've had on this podcast. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that part of, I guess, the stereotype of becoming a firefighter is that it's super easy to gain weight once you join because everyone's such good cooks and there's just that culture of like camaraderie. Mm-hmm. And then I loved how you were just like, no, I'm going to stay fit.
Yeah.
But we'll get into that too. But my first question that I was just thinking about was, is it still green?
Yeah.
Doesn't that seem like that doesn't make sense? Because don't you need to be in super good shape to be a firefighter? Is there no like standards or codes to that? Just asking as a citizen.
There are some light standards, okay. But it's more of kind of what we were talking about. The male kind of, you know, it's not masculine or cool to not eat like dog shit, which has always felt really weird to me. Like the ultimate sign of discipline is how you take care of your body. Are you moving? How you eat?
Mm-hmm.
So there's just this culture of eating horribly. So I don't know why. I've never really bought into it. I'm a human. I like to have a burger. But I do like the 80-20 rule. It's not going to be my everyday meal, all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, the story I told you, my instructor in the St. Louis Fire Academy was like, you're all going to gain 40 pounds your first year. And internally, I was like, nope. And then became a personal trainer as soon as I was out of the academy, got my CrossFit cert, and wanted to make that a priority to not be the stereotype. The other stereotype, I don't think I told you this one. I was doing a mile run. You know how they do the presidential fitness test? So we did our mile run our senior year. We got done running a mile. And this very rigid female PE teacher was like, that's the fastest mile all of you are ever going to run. And that's another thing that always just went in my mind. Like, nope. So every year on my birthday, I do a mile run. And I beat it by sometimes 2 minutes.
What's your latest?
46. Right at 6 minutes.
6 minutes?
Yeah. I don't train enough to do the sub six. But like I was running 7:50 when I was a senior in high school. So I'm not putting enough time to get better than that. But as a 45-year-old, I'm happy with a 6-minute mile.
Yeah, 6-minute mile is really good. I would say 6 to 7 minutes. I feel like you're doing great.
Yeah,
mine's a little longer right now.
Yeah, so back to your question about the things that I've done, I've listened to these negative voices and used those as carrots to not be those stereotypes because they exist. And she wasn't wrong.
Right.
I mean, most people are not going to ever run a mile again. And if they do, it's going to be because they're starting a New Year's resolution and they need to gain or lose, you know, 50, 80 pounds and they're going to quit in a month.
Right.
So that's the other thing, getting around people, talking to them about health and fitness and making it a lifestyle instead of this like get rich quick scheme, trying to lose weight for something. And that's the problem. Nothing's quick.
No, anything worth having needs to be built with like a good foundation and that takes time.
Right. Just like your savings account. I mean, your mental health, your physical health, all of it. It's just like your portfolio. It's small increments over time and making it a lifestyle instead of, oh, the doctor said I need to get on these 3 medications now. Like, so I didn't want to be that. And I try to be a model for that also.
Do you feel like being a dad has also really helped you, like that strength and that desire in you as well to want to be a role model and live by example?
Yeah, just showing my kids, that movement is just part of what we do. You know, my wife works out 5 days a week at 5 a.m. So just being a lighthouse, less about words and more about doing, so they see it. I remember getting preached at a lot when I was younger. I feel like that was our parents' generation. Like, you got to do this, but then they wouldn't do the thing.
Yeah, like, and you see that.
You need to go on a run. They weren't going on run. You need to do this. They weren't doing that. So I just try to do. And then, like I said, with the breath, I've never specifically said you need to breathe.
Yeah.
But he did that breathing on the flight because he'd been to my events. When I launched, he was there with my Australian Shepherd puppy for the first couple dozen. He was little, didn't want him to be home alone. So he just did it because he saw it. It wasn't me like, you have to do this and you need to do this. It was just doing it and him just absorbing it through, you know, seeing and being around it.
You've got my mind spinning right now. I'm like, there's this Hebrew concept where it's called a chashbon ha-nefesh, which I guess literally you can translate it to mean an audit of the soul. And so growing up, we have this concept of like, before you go to sleep at night, every person is supposed to do that audit of their soul to see like, how did my day go? How do I feel about it? Not necessarily from a judgmental, harsh perspective, just more of like, what happened? How can I grow? How can I improve? What can I do better tomorrow, right? And I think if you do that every day, it's much easier. And so when you were just talking about being a lighthouse, it just made me think for myself where it's like, I think we all have this vision of who we want to be, even just for ourselves, right? But like those are built in the daily habits that we do. And we can't do everything every day, but it's more of like based on who we said we want to be and who we know we can be, are those daily reflections showing? And if not, how can we do better for tomorrow? Right. So you're making me want to re-get back into doing that because I think that would be super helpful. I really like that concept. And I think that translates so well because I'm so into energy and I think energy is everything. So I think your whole role model for your business in terms of like being an example, but then also like it's not about the money, it's about the mission and it's about the purpose. So the fact that you are putting that energy out there, that's going to speak through your social media. You know what I mean? When people see the things that you're putting out there, that's going to speak when people come to the classes. They're going to see that authenticity.
Right. Yeah, you can sense that. When you go somewhere, there's a couple of places in St. Louis where it's $90. They have the cold tub and then an infrared sauna, which is not the thing. It's $90. There's no coaching. My clients go. When they first open, they were like, oh, Josh, there's somebody's doing it. And they went, they're like, I did one round and left. That's not the thing. And I knew right away it wasn't the thing because I know who's got the education, who's doing it. So it's cool that it's popping up, but they just don't have the knowledge and they're not doing it right. They're doing it real quick, you know, trying to add it on to their existing model. So those people go and they come back.
Yeah. And I think, so I'm part of this group called Babes in Business. And so it's all different kinds of entrepreneurs and also just people who work, you know, stereotypical jobs or have their own businesses. And we're talking about all different fields. And I think a lot of times what you're doing is very unique, but as this grows, there's going to be more and more places like it that pop up. And so what we were talking about at the group was just sometimes that feeling of the jealousy, the insecurity, like that can pop up. And so in that moment being like, but my people will find me.
Right.
I need to stop focusing on what other people are doing and comparing. And I think the only time comparing is helpful is if you see something that will make you better and you're not coming from a place of jealousy or feeling bad about yourself, but you're like, hey, they're really doing something great. How can maybe I incorporate and be better?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what I'm doing building this feels like when I started CrossFit in 2007. So there was only a couple gyms, and there was a lot of scarcity mindset after a while. It's like if you went somewhere else, they were mad. And my goal with my people is to build them up, get them to a place where they can leave and start their own thing, but collaborate and build them and feed them enough that they don't want to. Or if they do, they still come back and want to coach here. That's my whole thing, not to create this scarcity. You can't teach there. You can't coach there. What are you doing? That just doesn't sit well with me. So when you go to a place that's all about that, you can feel that. You can sense that. You may go there to do the thing they provide, but it's not going to be the same feeling in the community and the like you said, the chill energy.
Yeah.
And you know that when you step in and you talk to somebody.
Yeah. Oh, this is so interesting. There's just so many like different parts about like who you are. And I think it's really cool how it's all been stepping stones to lead you to like where you are right now. Looking back, would you have done anything differently?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I'm not perfect.
I know.
I've made a lot of mistakes. I just wish I would have found these things earlier. You know, I wasted a lot of time mulling through things, covering things up with alcohol. If I would have had these skill sets, maybe I could have started this path earlier. But again, I try not to be like obsessing on the past, coulda, woulda, shoulda. It made me who I am today. I can show up for veterans going through it now and try to help guide them through it. We got a lot of stuff going on here for veterans. So now I can talk to them like I've been here. I've been in that dark patch of suicidal mm-hmm. with a plan and dealing with mental health stuff. And that's what got me to where I am today. So I don't know that I would change much because right. I don't know that I could show up how I am today and help these people going through it. That resonates when you're vulnerable and you say, I've been here and these things helped me. Mm-hmm. It lands with people, you know, that vulnerability and that honesty lands. So maybe that's a long answer, but maybe I wouldn't change anything because it made me who I am.
Yeah, I agree. Because I think sometimes when it feels like, oh, maybe that if I only would have done this sooner. But I think even if you can't see it now, I think everything in your life, whether you believe in it or not, it's intentional. Mm-hmm. And so there's a purpose for it. And it will, maybe it's the connection with the person. You never know when everything's going to come together. Mm-hmm. And I heard something beautiful where it's like, they say like, you can connect the dots. Hindsight is 20/20. So if you don't understand when you're going through something right now, it's because you're in a dot. So just breathe through it.
Yeah.
And on that note, we haven't talked about your catchphrase, which is shift happens.
Yeah.
And you didn't even tell me beforehand. I was like, I want to wait till the podcast to know. But like, where did you get that catchphrase? What's the whole meaning behind it?
I just wanted like a quick, funny play on words that could be kind of our mantra, you know, mm-hmm. that would be attached to our logo. My son wears our shirts and got pulled up to the front desk because they thought it said shit happens.
Ah.
And then he like felt cool, you know, slid his sleeve down and was like, it's shift happens. So just kind of who I am, you know, mm-hmm. like just wanted to be funny, play on words. But also there's meaning to it, you know, like if you come in and you're going through something and you allow our coaches to coach you, you're not going to feel what you felt after the breath.
Yeah.
And then you double down and do the ice bath and then the sauna, whatever you've been holding on to. I mean, we've had people release generational trauma, families come together and like crying, holding hands.
Whoa.
So that's where it came from. Seeing it, the first couple hundred people, seeing people show up one way, like what you're saying, can feel an energy, can feel a vibe. And then when they leave, they're just like jello. They're just showing up as a different human mm-hmm. than when they came. And so that's where it came from. Shift does happen, but it's got to be intentional. It doesn't happen just by sitting here. You know, people use the word manifesting a lot. I love it. I think it's a thing, but you can't manifest everything. You have to show up, do the work, and make shift happen.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing that people don't realize when it comes to manifesting is that you need to take action. Mm. And that action may not equate anything, but it's just taking that step forward and trusting that things will happen, you know?
But yeah, back to your point on, you know, things happen for a reason. You know, there are phases of life. I went through it. We're on autopilot and you're just getting through the day, and getting through the day is the best you can do. And then every little rope that comes at you, an intimacy, going out, and you're just pulling every rope. That's not your destiny. That's you just being ping ponged around by every invite, every, you know, advance. And that's no way to live. That's yeah. not destiny. That's just you kind of doing this through life. So a lot of people are going through that right now. You know, this feels very similar to 2020. A lot of things are going on in the world, but there's always been a lot of things going on in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to just watch the news and be absorbed by that, I always tell people, take care of your own yard.
Yep.
Like, what did you do today to not be like in that outside thing? If there's something you can do about it, do it. If not, take care of your family, mm-hmm. show up, be present, Show up for your kids. Show up for your friends. Everybody needs that right now. Get off the news. If there's something you can do, great. If not, be a better you. That's what the world needs. If everybody focused more on self instead of like what so-and-so is doing and watching geopolitical stuff and thinking we're all experts, which we're not.
Nope.
Focus on self. Get yourself better. Be that ripple in the pond. And shift happens.
And your mental health will be so much better if you take a step back from the news.
Right.
If you need to know about something, don't worry. You'll find out. It's okay. You don't need to like be attached to it. It's just going to create worry, doubt, anxiety. Yeah. It's never going to be good.
Yeah.
So I have this tradition for my podcast. It's all based on this Hebrew quote, which is, Chacham halamei mikol adam, which means one who is wise is one who learns from everyone. We've learned so much from you. So if you can leave us with like one last life lesson or favorite quote, what would it be?
So I think the life lesson would be kind of like what I told you, the story with my son, that we breathe 25,000 times a day. And so the breath is the anchor of our program. It always will be. And the breath is our anchor always. So whatever you're going through, all you have to do is start breathing through your nose. That's going to calm you down.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is extend that exhale and you're going to start calming down. Don't let the outside world, whatever that is, let your body run ragged. You're your own alchemist. The breath is the anchor.
Mm-hmm.
Come to us, find a breath coach, get the skill set, just like a trainer that's working out, and be your own alchemist. You can control what's going on in your inner state by just breathing. And people say it's woo-woo. It's not woo-woo. Everybody breathes.
Yeah.
It would be like you having a manual stick shift and not knowing how to operate a clutch. That's what we are. We're driving. And if we don't have the skill set, we're driving a stick shift without knowing how to operate the clutch.
Yeah. I love that. And honestly, like, I also am a big believer that like, this is, I'm really into like Kabbalah, which is also like law of attraction, but like rooted in more like science. But it talks more about how like everything's really an illusion and it's just a reflection of your inner state. So you will find that even like we talked earlier about like working out, eating the right things, drinking enough water, moving. And if you just even just start with, if you don't know where to start because you're so overwhelmed with your life right now, and you're like, I don't have time for all these things. Even breathing, breathing costs nothing. It only takes a few moments to regulate yourself. And that alone can really just change everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to that point, I started this during quarantine. I mean, when people were masking up and things were closed, I mean, I had clients ask during my launch, was I going to change the ice water after each person? That's how like scarcity and like inflamed everybody was.
Yeah.
And that's why I decided to start, because I said it then and I'll say it now. I knew the mental health fallout was going to be worse than the thing. Some people were asking if they should wear masks. So I took action because I saw there was going to be a need instead of just keeping that knowledge for myself. So that would be my additional advice. Be first. Don't worry about your friend group, your occupation, this model that you've presented to the world. If you have a desire to spread something and you're feeling like, what am I doing right now? Instead of just working that job, start it as a side project. Like you're doing it now. Start that thing you're passionate about. Let it build steam to give yourself a purpose to start being a ripple in the pond.
Yeah. And you don't know where it will lead you. And it's so fun. Like when you follow your curiosity, I think is like the overall theme, magical things will happen for you. Not right away. It takes time and there will definitely be hiccups on the way, but consistency and just following that passion. There's this quote, I don't know if I told this to you already, but my audience knows it's my favorite quote. It's by Zig Ziglar. And he says that if you have an idea for a business or a product that's not currently in existence, it's your moral obligation to make it a reality.
Ooh, I like that.
It has helped me through so many dark times because like, whether it's a passion, a hobby, or even like a business dream that you have, there's going to be moments where it feels like nothing's moving forward. Maybe everything you built up feels like it's breaking apart. Maybe you're just overwhelmed and overstimulated and you just like want to shut down. So whenever that happens, I breathe. I let myself feel my feelings because I think that's super important to not just bottle it in, release those feelings. But then at the same time, having that presence to be like, okay, well, it's my moral obligation. I wouldn't have been given this desire if I wasn't meant to create it. And yes, there's billions of people in the world, but there's only one me. And like, they could steal my recipe, but it won't taste the same.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. I have a sexist question to ask, but this is just, okay. I have to ask before we end too. Okay. So I had heard that with firefighters, there's part of the training, like there's a certain amount that like you need to be able to carry. Mm-hmm. And I heard with women, it's less. My brain never understood that. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I'm like, how does that make sense? I mean, I know physically, obviously women are not a lot of times as strong as men.
Yeah.
But like, why is that? I know we're all about equality and whatnot, but like, I think in certain situations, like, how does that make sense?
Yeah. I can't answer that question because I've been doing this for so long. I think the standards have changed.
Okay.
So there are tests that you have to take to get into certain things, but I couldn't tell you what those weights or things are.
Okay.
We had to do a dummy drag to get in the St. Louis Fire Academy as part of the testing. And I believe there was like two dummies. So one may have been a little bit lighter. So I can't really answer that question.
Okay.
As far as like the physical standards. So sorry.
Fair. That's okay.
I can get back to you though.
Yeah, I'm curious.
In the county, they have a CPAT and it's a very structured indoor test. You put so much weight on your shoulders for the stairs and you do carry certain things, but I'm not sure the difference between men and women.
Okay. And on that note as well, I don't know if you want to like use this for your breath work and especially the cold plunges, but you did mention before, like specifically for women, how our experiences could be different depending on where we are in our menstrual cycle.
Yeah.
And so I saw something recently that like blew my mind, which was talking about how you can reframe the experience to like normally women during like our luteal phase and then also during like our actual menstrual phase, we're like super emotional. And instead of like it being a stereotype like, oh, you must be on your period, you're so emotional, instead having the thought and the reframe of we all have these emotions in us. This is a time when our body and our mind is like really feeling our feelings, leaning into that and using that as a time to like purge, let all those feelings out in a healthy way where you're not, you know, hurting those around you.
Yeah.
And then it's almost like it's a rebirth that you're having.
Yeah.
And I thought that was such an interesting mindset shift.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very cool. I mean, not specifically to that, but I have clients that come in and if you're really excited, your central nervous system is really beat down, you've been sick, sometimes the cold is not what you need.
Mm-hmm.
So my regulars that have been coming for years, they've developed their own practice. So you did 3 minutes, 15 minutes, three rounds, right? I tell everybody, pay attention to your body. Some days you don't need that stimulus. Sometimes just a long sauna session, you know, especially ladies, if their iron's low, sometimes the ice is going to be too much. It's a positive stress. We call it eustress. But that's just, again, having that awareness. Like there's days where I'll just do one ice bath and two long sauna sessions before and after. So it's just practicing that awareness, paying attention to your body and leaving feeling optimal.
And showing up for yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like we've covered so much. Before we wrap up, is there anything that we haven't touched that you would like to share?
Well, I don't think so.
Okay.
We had a lot.
We did. This is great.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. So for my audience, what's the best way for them to support you?
Just come to breathandexposurestl.com or Breath and Exposure on Instagram. Come check us out. Like I said, shift does happen.
Mm-hmm.
Book a session, bring the homies and come try us out.
Yeah. I highly recommend 10 out of 10. I did it myself. Well, guys, this was another amazing episode. Thank you so much for listening or watching. And if you're not already watching, the video is on Spotify and YouTube. And if you're not already subscribed, what are you doing with your life? Please subscribe, especially on YouTube because your girl's trying to grow her channel. And I hope you guys have a great week. Let's get it. Let's go.